Look, I appreciate heels, and I think they're wonderful. But I think people are more wonderful. So, if I'm going to a fancy event, I don't want to be more concerned about the possibility of breaking my ankle than having a conversation with someone. Besides, I met a stylist who literally had to have a nerve taken out of her foot because of high heels. Heels literally made her lose her nerve, okay? I know not wearing heels with a fancy dress is such a fashion faux pas, but I'm all about comfort first. Because here's the thing. Actors have red carpet days, like the Golden Globes. And I know that sounds so pretentious, but hey, dreams come true. So that means 8 to 10 hours of wearing this outfit. You have to ask yourself, am I going to try to suck in my kidneys and not be able to talk to anybody? Can I even walk in this little number? Don't get me wrong. I don't want to go to these events that people put so much work into and look like I didn't care about it or didn't try. I think that's disrespectful, but I have to have options. All women need options. I believe you don't have to compromise fashion just because you want to be comfortable. Or to breathe. Because I think I heard somewhere that that's important to life, right? Breathing? When I started promoting This Is Us, I was worried about how things would photograph. But I slowly gained confidence. Part of it was learning that I was there to talk about the work of the amazing group of people who are my colleagues. So it wasn't about what I wore. Clothes don't define me. One of the challenges, and it's still something I struggle with, is that voice that urges you to settle. Oh, it fits. That's fine. I think that's a voice women hear in their head, no matter what size is on the tag. This'll do. It's harder for me personally because, frankly, it is difficult to find things I actually like in my size. I still have the mindset that I'm some sort of walking fashion emergency, and so as long as I can fit into it, sold! That's why sometimes I'll be getting dressed for an event, and if I don't have the right shoes or the right clutch in that moment, I'll say, oh, whatever, who cares? And then I'll see photographs and think, maybe I should have cared. My reaction to those pictures isn't, ugh. Instead, my reaction is, next time, speak your mind, Chrissy. When magazines wanted to include me, sometimes it felt like the opportunities were brought to me like a miracle. Like the little charity case that could. I'm sure that there are straight-sized women who are excited to get publicity. But the fact that it is such a surprise to a lot of people, when I do, only makes me more cognizant that plus-size fashion is not really considered fashion yet. Or chic. Or truly acceptable. Oh, look who snuck in. I think the fashion industry is changing when it comes to plus-size fashion. But it's like everybody's coming off of an Ambien. Slowly and often without much direction. Most urgently, there's my own biggest qualm. The arms. The arms are always so big. Okay, I have a bigger midsection, but that doesn't mean my arms need these yards of silk. Just like in straight sizes, not every plus-size body is shaped the same. Designers must begin to cater to people who are heavier on top or the bottom, instead of assuming one big size fits all. Because, good God, sometimes the tailoring costs me more than the clothes. In the past few years, I've been blessed in so many ways to have a light shining on me. And one of the bonus features of that light is that folks love to pick apart my outfit and fashion choices to make them feel better about themselves. But here's the deal. I love what I've chosen, and I feel beautiful every time I take a step onto the red carpet. More on that later. Now for fun, let's do a full-on CSI red carpet on some of my favorite looks. Allergic to latex. One of my favorite red carpet looks was the short-sleeve burgundy latex dress I wore to the MTV Movie and TV Awards in 2017. It was custom designed by Jane Doe Latex in Burbank. I had wanted to work with them for a while, and I figured if the Kardashians can do it, why can't I? But listen, I didn't wear it to show that I was interested in latex for a personal enjoyment. It's not that I'm not in touch with my sexuality. That just wasn't my statement. For a long time, I had to beg my stylist to let me wear it. Girl, I'm gonna get that, I said. Well, if you ever go on some MTV award show, then we can do it. When I was nominated for their Next Generation and asked to present, my stylist was my first call. Did you check the internet? I got invited to the MTV Awards, I said. I'm wearing a latex dress. So, there are some things you need to be cautious about when wearing a red latex dress. No, not people's reaction. I'll get to that. I'm talking about lubing up to wear it. Also, I had to put down a mat in the car so I wouldn't slide all over the leather seats. Milo Ventimiglia and I got to present the award to Hugh Jackman, who I love, and when he came up to the stage, I whispered to him in a rush of words, "Sir, there's lube on my dress. You probably don't want to hug me." He gave me the, "Girl, are you crazy?" eyes right there in front of everyone. "It's latex," I whisper shouted. "Latex." People got so hyped about me being in latex. There was a lot of criticism on social media as if some sort of nasty signal went out. Me in a latex dress literally became news headlines. I had to wonder, what is it about a big girl in latex that bothers you? Was it the cut? The waist? My bits weren't showing? I can take criticism about silly stuff in stride, but it bothered me that a lot of the mean comments were couched in a worry that I had been duped into thinking I looked beautiful or cool. They said my stylist had betrayed me, and they wondered if my friends secretly hated me because they didn't tell me how I really looked. I didn't want to strike out at anyone in particular, but I was stung. So, on a whim, I tweeted, "For the record, I wear what I want when I want. Newsflash, it's my body. Hashtag thanks though." But I wasn't finished. Then I Instagrammed a photo of me in the dress. I didn't comb through 100 pictures to find the best one. I just grabbed one shot where anyone could look at my face and say, "Oh, that girl is happy." Because I was. "Remember that time folks got rowdy because I wore a dress?" I captioned the photo. The outpouring of love and support from all of you lovely people has not gone unnoticed. I hope that in some small way, an unconventional body wearing an unconventional material opened up discussion, hearts and minds. I truly had no idea it would make anyone feel uncomfortable. I just wanted to try something different. All I'm saying is do you, boo. Wear what you want, love who you love, and treat people the way you want to be treated. Now that's out of the way. Congratulations to all the winners at the MTV Movie and TV Awards. Do you, boo. Like, totally. If I had a Cinderella moment, it would be when I wore the purple dress to the Golden Globes in January 2017. I had torn the meniscus in my knee from dancing with my 10-year-old nephew at New Year's, but I was determined not to miss my first Globe nomination. Side note, I needed a wheelchair to get off the plane in L.A., starting off a fun set of rumors that I had undergone a gastric bypass. Fun! Because of my knee, I wasn't sure I would be able to walk down the red carpet. Like, I honestly asked my team, "What do? Wheel myself down the carpet?" Yeah, that's a great look. Fortunately, I just needed a knee brace. But I was terrified of having too long a dress or a train that I would get caught up in. I was so lucky that a designer had been willing to make a couple of dresses for me. But unfortunately, one was just too long and the other just didn't work. The purple dress I chose, which was a Nathaniel Paul, was originally going to be for another event. I literally woke up out of a deep sleep the night before the Globes, gasping, "I have to wear the purple dress." I called my team when it was a decent hour and told them my decision. "Oh, thank God," someone said. "What do you mean, oh, thank God? You weren't going to tell me that you didn't like the other dress?" But I also understood they just respected that it had to be my choice. Nathan's dress felt very regal, and yet it wasn't overly fussy, which I loved. Nathan had appeared on Project Runway, and he has plus-size women in his family. He gets it, and knows how to flatter a woman without it being too much. People tend to put too much material or bling on a big girl, like camouflage. We're not trying to hide! Also, he put a jeweled belt, I called it applique hardware, at the waist. He wasn't, "Let's cover her entire body." He wanted to accentuate all the positives. That dress had a lower neckline than I usually wear. And it's not like I don't embrace the girls. I just don't want to worry or fuss about slippage. But the real interesting aspect for me was the bold shoulder design. People expressed their concerns. You want to look wider? But it worked for me. That powerful statement shoulder made me want to stand up straight and own my space. There's a radio personality who's a curvy babe, and I like her very much. Well, she had opinions, too, when I went on her show. Listen to me, girl, she said to me after she saw me in that dress. I'm a fan of yours. I think you're the bomb. But baby, that dress? What's with the shoulders? You look like a shower curtain. I disagree, I said. Your dress looked like it was on a coat hanger, she said. Well, okay, that's cool, I said. You can have your opinion, and it's not going to make me love you any less. That's fine, but I really felt powerful in it. I really did appreciate her honesty. Everything you do or wear, people are going to have an opinion, and that's fine. Just remember, the only opinion that matters is yours. Okr! Hippie chic. It's tricky to find variety with plus size anything, much less for award show looks. Like so much in life, you have to create what you want. In January 2017, I decided to design something for the Critics' Choice Awards with my stylist at the time. I had this image of a floor-length floral throwback, and she found this intricate fabric of beautiful embroidered flowers. Being a big girl, you want to hide sometimes, but with that dress, it was like, boom, I'm here in all my embroidered glory. A lot of people just couldn't get past the fact that a big girl was wearing something that made her stand out. The first thing out of some of the reporters' mouths when they came to interview me was, wow, you're wearing a print. So I guess it made a statement. But it was what I wanted to wear. You can't control how it's received or how someone interprets it. But by trusting your instincts and doing what you want, you then educate people about doing the same thing. Fashion Week fitting in. There I was at Layla Rose's atelier, watching the girls come in to be fitted for Fashion Week. I was about 18 sizes larger than the models. Yet people were putting just as much care into making sure that my Emmy dress was right for me and that I was happy with how I looked. I didn't feel better than or less than. I just felt equal to a girl who I'm certain must have been a double zero. I never felt embarrassed or worried. We were in this together, both seeing what worked best for us. It was an amazing moment for me in that I was reminded that it doesn't matter what size you are. It's how you feel about yourself. Confidence, like beauty, is an inside job. Innately, I had that confidence because of who I am as a person and how I want to be treated and how I want to treat people. But I'd never been in this situation, in someone's atelier where they are designing clothes for Fashion Week. Maybe it felt right because I had spent years putting little deposits in that self-confidence bank. Layla's team had created a sketch for me to visualize the details of my dress. There were two color choices, and I picked what I later coined deep sea green. I wanted it to be dramatic to honor the night, but a girl needs a backstory. It was a dark color, but I wanted to stand out. It was embellished with two rows of pearls and complemented by crystals all over the bottom. What a gift to have such a gown made for my first Emmy nomination. Joy and pain. I was going to the NAACP Image Awards, and I wanted to honor the night by making a visual statement about being present and standing in your space. Michael Costello was kind enough to create a fun bubblegum fuchsia number made just for me. It serves no one if the instinct is to say, oh, don't make this dress for me, I don't deserve it. Instead, I want to be someone who says, thank you, and I'm going to wear it with joy and pride. This dress was the ultimate answer to anyone who thinks plus-size people should stick to black. My mom was visiting me in Los Angeles during this time, and she came with me for the fitting. This is just a fitting, right? She said. You're not wearing that dress. Yeah, Mom, I said. It's a check fit. This is what I'm wearing tonight. Oh. Mom, why'd you have to say that right now? Just saying that was big for me. I normally don't talk to my mother this way, but it hurt so much that I had to say that in a room full of people. The hardest part was that I knew her comment came from a good place. I just don't think it's flattering. Oh, okay, well, thank you for sharing that with me. But sometimes it's not about it being flattering. It's about the color or the shape or the design. That dress was about celebrating living by my own rules. And I loved it. So yeah, everyone is going to have an opinion. Even your own mother. Because I get to wear pretty dresses a lot now, I often get asked if I have any rules about fashion. My rule is to break all of them. First of all, why do we have them? We have rules and laws to protect people. Who are we protecting with fashion rules? Because I don't think those laws are there to protect me. Who am I going to hurt with a dress? You and I know the fashion police aren't doling out tickets on the streets of Hollywood because folks are in actual danger of coming to terms with their prejudices. As a plus-size woman, I'm typically the usual suspect. Bloop, bloop. Be mindful. Do what you want to do. So let's take a look at the rules and regulations for dressing while plus-size. Don't show your arms. No body contouring. In fact, you're not allowed to wear anything tight at all. You would never want to show any folds, curves, inconsistencies, or God forbid, your tummy. Never wear anything too revealing. You can't be sexy if you're a plus-size woman. Your skirt can't be too short. And we just want to make sure you understand what we said about tight clothes being a big no. In fact, wear black from head to toe, stay silent, and please just let everyone forget you exist. Cool? You're pretty much told to cover up because your body is offensive to the world. We are so trained in these fashion rules that plus-size women internalize them. We police ourselves and do our best not to cause trouble by even being seen. These rules are so ingrained in us, and we begin to think they're for our own good. But they come from people who feel uncomfortable when they see images of plus-size women. Does this discomfort come from, oh, they're unhealthy and that makes me feel a certain way? Or is it, plot twist, I think I'm attracted to this person. What does that mean about me? Who am I? Again, what people think about you is none of your business. You do what makes you happy, and you can't control how it makes other people feel. It's your life. Why would you live for anybody else? The whole point of us being here is to be ourselves. I have my own tips to share with you, but I don't want you to think of them as rules. They are just the things it took me a while to figure out about getting dressed, and I want to save you some time so you can get to the party faster. 1. Wear whatever the hell you want. There, I said it. Peer pressure can be tricky when you're growing up. Even positive messages like, that looks really great on you, or helpful advice about accentuating different parts of your body can make you feel like you're dressing to please someone else. I don't care if a stylist says something is perfect. If I don't want to wear it, I don't want to wear it. Recently, there was a dress that was custom made for me, and I thought, this is just not for me. I might be 37, but I don't want to dress matronly, no matter how pretty everyone else thought the dress was. Whereas one person said it was vintage. To me, it just felt dated. And I spoke up for myself. I'm just not interested in wearing it. I just don't like it. 2, put the script down. In TV and film, we have these things called log lines, which are one-sentence summaries of whatever project you're working on. When This Is Us was a pilot, the logline was, dramedy follows an ensemble, some of them sharing the same birthday, whose life stories intertwine in curious ways. There are people who can put a logline on their fashion, classic cuts with modern fabrics, or everyday couture. But I wake up some days and want to wear something different, color blocking one day, a little retro the next, or even just making it simple comfort. It doesn't always have to be about dressing to the nines. Wear whatever feels good when you put it on in that moment. 3, think outside the box. I've been so inspired and educated by all sorts of folks, women of every size and shape on every platform. Ooh, I could wear this or could wear that. Why don't I try this? If you see them take risks, let that encourage you to take risks yourself. Don't be afraid. 4, let it go. One babe's trash might be another babe's treasure. Give away the pieces you no longer wear or fit into, or that dress that looked great on the rack but fit terribly at home. Get rid of them, and don't let them clutter up your closet and your mind. They'll get over it, I promise. If the clothes are businessy, donate them to an organization like Dress for Success. They have helped nearly 1 million women try to achieve economic independence. I just did an event for them, and they help women who are dealing with life changes, whether they have lost a job or going through a divorce. Whatever their situation, when they are ready to get back in the workforce, they can go and feel like a woman, as opposed to getting a handout. The organization also has programs that help women with interviewing and budgeting. At the event, I spoke to one of the Dress for Success ambassadors. She told me, "I came in for a pair of shoes, and my life was completely changed." She has savings for her family now. I thought about my mom, who had 4 children on her own before marrying Trigger. I can't imagine what it would have done for her to have the support to go on job interviews so she could provide for her family. There are so many people who don't have the resources or who have been through a traumatic experience that leaves them not knowing which way is up. And don't forget, there's also Career Gear, which provides men with business and business casual clothes to land interviews. Number 5, make a great tailor your bestie. No article of clothing is a one-size-fits-all, and you are worth going to the tailor to get the fit that you want. A good fit can change your life. Number 6, honor the occasion. A lot of people get timid about dressing up because they're afraid of looking like they're trying too hard. But turn that idea around. If someone comes to your birthday party and is dressed up, do you think, who does she think she is? No, you think, oh, she cared about this event. She cares about me. So show people you care about them. The same is true of your job. Remember that old adage, dress for the job you want, not the job you have. Number 7, confidence is the best accessory. For better or for worse, when someone looks you up and down, that person is getting a whole message. One that has nothing to do with the number on the tag or what you paid for your outfit. The first thing the person will see is your confidence. Because you could wear the most expensive dress, but if you don't feel good mentally or emotionally, it doesn't matter what you're wearing. Number 8. People will be challenged by that confidence. Sometimes people get jealous when they see you own your look, no matter how humbly you go about it. There will be a smaller sized girl who looks amazing in a particular outfit, but just doesn't feel comfortable. Meanwhile, there's a girl who's a size 22 who's just like killing the game. People might feel a need to bring her down. One of the secret weapons people use is, "I wish I had your confidence." I am perplexed by this statement, and I initially took offense at it. We all know what they're really saying. How can you feel this good but look so bad? Well, my friends, there's a complicated response, but I will give you the cliff notes. If you can't love yourself for who you are right now, you'll never get to the place you're meant to be. Number 9, channel your inner rock star. I don't want to just fit in. Why fit in when you're supposed to stand out, right? If you start to feel down about not being able to just grab something off the rack, whether it's because of a size or the price, think about all those amazing musicians who take the stage in clothes that are singularly theirs. Whether it's a $1.50 t-shirt from Goodwill or a dress you have had to have tweaked by a tailor, embrace the notion that your look is one of a kind, because you are one of a kind. 15. Return on the investment. Dear all, I first want to thank you for this amazing opportunity. Last night felt like Christmas Eve. Well, I've never dreamed of sugar plums, believe it or not. I've always wished for a role like this. I was so moved by this character that I've asked my agent to pass this letter on to you all. Aside from the obvious physical aspects of Kate, this is my life. I am Kate. I've been the second fiddle, assistant, and the sidekick to many successful people, all while questioning why I am so close yet so far away. I've been so broken that I almost have given it all up. While my weight has been a steady struggle both in business and my personal life, It has also been a beautiful uphill battle of self-discovery. I've been gifted to teach tolerance and share my journey with women and men who know all too well of discrimination for their size, but desperately want to change. I want to be a visible inspiration to all those who pursue their dreams, and especially for those who think they lack a fighting chance. I have lost over 100 pounds on my own. I am committed to Kate's evolution, and I would be honored to embody your vision of her. While I know there are other wonderful ladies in the running, I had to express my unwavering love for this incredible, life-changing role. From the moment my agent sent me the breakdown to the first time I read the script, I have never felt like a role was written more for me. This story is so heartwarming and charming. It just rings so true to me that I can't imagine someone else bringing it to life. I embody and walk Kate's life every single day. And I'm hoping that you will see that too. It is the air that I breathe, and I want to be able to bring that to life for you. Regardless of what happens, I cannot thank you enough from the bottom of my mushy heart for this awesome experience. It has been a life-changing moment for me. Warmest regards, Chrissy Metz. I wrote this letter after I did the first of two screen tests for This Is Us. I wanted Dan Fogelman, the creator of the show, to know that I appreciated that he was telling the story of a woman who was truly dealing with her weight. Not in the, oh my God, I gained a pound from my stressful job way. With Kate Pearson, he had created a woman who was really struggling. She wasn't a caricature or the butt of the joke. She was living in the shadow of her brother and had gone to L.A., but was stuck, not knowing what she wanted to do with her life. And she was dealing with a lack of confidence stemming from her weight issues. The first time I read her lines in the script, all I could think of was, oh my God, I am Kate, and then, I have to be on the show, please. Back then, the script was called Untitled Dan Fogelman Project, a pilot. As the script went around, everyone wanted to be a part of it. I had just one problem. I needed new headshots. Headshots cost money, it turns out, and I didn't have any. At the time, I was working back in the office, transitioning my clients to their new agent and making sure they were all taken care of. My plan was to audition full-time so I could get out of it, whereas the agency used to cover my cell phone bill and car payments, that had stopped. My friend Gina had taken me in, letting me stay at her place and contribute what I could for the rent. I really wanted to get my headshots done with Dana Patrick, who is an amazing photographer, so I needed to figure out how to get $900. I didn't want to ask my friends to lend me money, and I couldn't ask my family, so I decided to take out a payday loan. I had to trust that I could pay it all back at once. When I got the headshots, my agent sent them in, pitching me on the strength of my recent credit with American Horror Story. It showed a bit of experience to get me in the door, instead of, oh, there's this girl who says she's really like the character. Thank God I got an audition. The casting director was working out of the Sony lot, and as I drove over there, the morning just seemed different. The skies were bluer, the birds were birdier. I felt like Belle in Beauty and the Beast, walking through her little village. Good morning, said the security guard. Good morning, I sing-songed. Everything was in technicolor, and I don't know if it was because I wanted the role so badly, or I knew I'd lived this and could bring something real to it. There was magic in the air. And then I walked in the door and saw a couple of the same girls I see at auditions. Womp, womp, womp. The audition scene was the one where Kate has just fallen off her scale and her brother Kevin has come to help. I sat in the chair, propping up my right leg. The casting director had me do the scene, and in the back of my mind I was thinking, oh God, this is the worst audition I have ever had in my life. Okay, thanks, she said. You're welcome, I said. Thanks for coming in, she said. Sigh. You're welcome. You know when something is so close you can taste it, and then it's snatched right out of your mouth? Yeah. But the thing about auditioning is that sometimes they see something in you that you can't. They can see that there is some innate part of you that is right for whatever it is that you are trying to achieve. You just need to get there. There was something there in me, because they brought me back in for a callback, this time auditioning for Dan Fogelman and Jean-Louis Kwa and Glenn Ficarra. I got another call, this time to do a screen test. They had one request. We need you to dye your hair darker. My hair was red with blonde highlights at the time, kind of like my mom's. Okay, I said. Oh, man, I wouldn't be able to use those headshots anymore. They had the characters of Kevin and Kate down to 5 guys and 5 girls, and we were all brought in for the test. This was the first time I met Justin Hartley, and I read with him once. It felt right. We were clicking. The best part is that he is obviously super gorgeous, but I'm not into blondes. I crush a lot, but man, it would be weird to have a crush on the guy playing your brother. It also has to be said again and again that his looks are secondary to all that makes him wonderful. He is so talented and thoughtful and funny. Obviously, everyone agreed, because he was already cast when I was brought in for a second screen test. It had come down to me and another actress who was funny, smart, and beautiful. NBC wanted to test us both with Justin. There was just one issue. I had 81 cents in my bank account. I was freaking out because I wasn't sure if I had enough gas in my car to get to NBC Universal. And you needed to have at least $20 in your bank account to swipe your card to the gas pump. Thank God I made it there. And as soon as I walked in, I saw the girl up against me. She looked more like Justin, and I was certain she was going to get the part. It's your job, I said. No, it's your job, she said back. Well, whose ever it is, I said, God bless us both. After we both tested, Justin walked out with us to the parking structure. He said goodbye, and it felt very awkward because I was either going to go on this journey with him as his sister, or I was going to go home and not be a Pearson. I got into my car, and as I was about to call my agent, a number I didn't know showed up on my cell. I assumed it was a bill collector, so I ignored it. The girl with 81 cents can't help you. As I drove out of my space and through the maze of the parking structure, I called my agent. It went terribly, I told him. I'm not going to get the job. It hadn't, but I didn't want him to have any illusions. I just felt like they were going to go with the other actress. I'm sure he was cutting up. I couldn't even make a call right because I was losing service driving around this parking structure. And then I heard a beep, and it was that freaking number calling again. Let me see who it is, I said. I switched over, and what I heard was like, hello? I yelled. I could make out an E. This is Chrissy. Chrissy! We know who we called, said the voice as I made yet another turn. Oh, right. This is Dan Fogelman, I thought. Oh, this could be really bad, or this could be really good. Hi, so we just wanted to let you know. The phone cut off again. Oh, God, no, what? I'm sorry? We just wanted to tell you that you're our girl. What? I screamed, are you kidding me? No, he said. I realized I hadn't been paying attention to the road. I don't even know where I'm going, I told Dan. I think I'm going out the entrance. No, he said. Don't. We need you. In my home, I have a framed copy of an email sent to Dan Fogelman from his producing partner, Jess Rosenthal. The chain starts with, just curious, who got Kate? Chrissy, writes Dan. Yes, is Jess's reply. When the first episode premiered, Dan framed the email and sent it to my house. He's literally the kindest, most humble human being that you will ever meet. It's absurd how giving he is. Dan Fogelman is solely responsible for changing my life. He wrote a role for someone we'd never seen before. It's always going to be about the wait for me, Kate says in a monologue in the second episode. That's been my story ever since I was a little girl. And every moment that I'm not thinking about it, I'm thinking about it. Like, will this chair hold me? Will this dress fit me? And if I ever get pregnant, won't anyone ever notice? It's just at the core of who I am. It's just deep inside. And 8 tequila shots can only mask that for a couple hours. I remember reading those lines and running to Dan saying, these are my fears. And I love that now Kate is evolving to a place where that is not her only storyline. that was just the beginning of her story. When we meet Kate, she's weighing herself half naked on the scale. I had to find comfort in the discomfort and use it for the scene. It was important for Kate and the journey she's going on, and for me, and also for the women in hair and makeup who gasped and told me they could never do that. It's a comment on how we are judged for the way we look, and a feeling everyone can relate to. I take off my earrings because Kate's in a place where she feels every ounce counts. Reese Witherspoon told me when I met her, "We've all done it." People of all walks of life respond to Kate because we all feel vulnerable. We have all gotten caught up in our inadequacies, but if we move through them, we can learn and get where we want to be. And time and again, I have seen that the answer to what we really want, the reason people connect to Kate, is that wish to love and be loved. As close as the cast is now, we didn't all get together until the table read. Well, we all squeezed into the little kitchen at the NBC Universal lot first. There was Mandy Moore and Milo Ventimiglia as Mom and Dad Pearson, and Sterling K. Brown and Justin Hartley as brothers Randall and Kevin. We talked about karaoke and movies we'd seen, Sterling getting the conversations going. Then we sat at one big conference room table with assigned seats. I sat between Justin and Chris Sullivan, the actor who plays Kate's fiancé, Toby. It's hard to believe now that I had never met Chris before the table read. I feel like he has always been there supporting me. I didn't test with him, and in fact, I tested with other actors auditioning for the role. But when we met, I just knew, oh yeah, this is gonna be good. And it's been amazing ever since. Watch him on screen, and you know what I go through trying to keep a straight face. His nuances and choices as an actor are incredible, and he can show so much in one look or a fist bump. For me to play the straight guy to the funny man is so difficult, since I like to make people laugh so much. I can't tell you how many times I've thought to myself, I'm gonna ruin this take, I'm gonna ruin this take. Okay, Chrissy, you can do this, you don't have to. But with him as my partner, I make it through. And from the beginning, Chris gave me courage. He helped me with my lines because I was too afraid to memorize them. I was frozen because there was a chance of failure if I actually moved forward. Chris, I don't know my line, I said. This was the second episode where we were sitting on the edge of the wall at the Hollywood party we go to with Kevin. Yeah, you do. Chris, what is it? He told me. And I did know it, but he was so kind and didn't make me feel like an idiot. He looked me right in the eye and said, you've got this. He could have sabotaged me. And there are actors who do that. Nobody on our set, but they are out there. I have enough concerns about sabotaging myself. That early belief that I didn't know my lines was just my fear of success. I worried about making the right choices on how I wanted to deliver the lines. I was showing up for myself, and I hadn't done that a lot. To do my work now, I had to do that 100 times a day for every line, for every scene, for every other person. It is very easy to feel outclassed on our set. No matter how much I love each amazing person, Sterling is so good, it's distracting. I don't have many scenes with him, but I will watch him and get so caught up that I forget I need to get ready for my own scene. He has the most contagious laugh, and sometimes he'll laugh so hard he will fall to his knees or onto his back. It is such pure joy that I can't help but want to involve myself in his laughter. I watch him and our Beth, Susan Kelechi Watson, and I'm just like, give them all the awards, all of them. Susan is so subtle and brilliant in her acting that people think she is Beth. She's so much fun, loves karaoke, and she is funny as heck. And when I start to feel like the new kid in school again, worrying that I'm not as experienced as the other actors, there's Sterling calling out of the blue with encouragement. Sister, he always says. Brother, I always answer. You're killing the game. Stop. Do you know that I love you, Chrissy Metz? What? I just love you. Oh, Sterling, you don't know how much I needed to hear that. We're all there for each other that way. Mandy and Milo have also looked out for us. Like they have this amazing parenting energy that extends to real life. I'm not sure if it's the longevity of their careers that's given them the confidence to extend that to us, but I'll take it. I'm older than Mandy, but I believe she is way more mature than me. And Milo. Oh, Milo. From the beginning, he was the captain of the ship. He's always asking me, you holding up? You need anything, Chris? He's the only person in my life, besides my grandmother, who has called me Chris. And I embrace it and love it. Even on photo shoots, he will sort of take the reins. When we did our first ever photo shoot as a cast for the show, it was when the title being kicked around was Happy Birthday. The art director had brought in birthday hats for us to wear to create a zany look. Yeah, we're not putting on the birthday hats, Milo said from the jump. It wasn't tough or nasty, it was just sure. At that point, I felt so new that I'm sure I would have done whatever was asked. Instead, I agreed, yeah, what he said. On the set, Milo is the guy who was looking out for everyone. His thing is that he always has a handkerchief in his back pocket to give if you're crying or sweating under the lights. He's that guy. One day we were doing a Q&A and I was crying because, well, that's what I do. Oh my God, Milo, I said, I'll get your handkerchief dry cleaned. You're good, he said, taking it back from me. You just took back your dirty handkerchief. Yeah, don't worry about it. When we are in a group and a fan sees us, it can be overwhelming for that person. One time, Justin, Milo, Chris, and I were in Utah at a charity event. This woman came up to us and couldn't speak. She didn't even know where to look. She was so emotional. Okay, Milo said to the woman, putting his hand lightly on her arm to calm her. What's your name? What's your name? It was something like Samantha. Okay, Samantha. Yes, we can take a picture. He took the phone from her and perfectly set up a selfie with her and all of us. He is Jack Pearson in real life, y'all. And Mandy is totally a mothering force. There are some times when the Pearson family gets together on a set during a break and she's in her old age makeup. She's incredibly professional and doesn't break character one bit. It's so commendable, and I think, oh, no wonder she's wildly successful. People ask me, is she real? And I say, oh, Mandy is real. She's such a beautiful human being, and she's genuinely a good person. She's so thoughtful that she tricked me for Christmas last year. Our costumer came up to me on set and asked me all casually, Chrissy, what kind of metal do you like for jewelry? White gold, silver, rose gold? I thought it was for Kate's engagement ring for Toby. I have a choice? I asked. Wow, I love rose gold. Okay, she said. Let's just make sure about the size of the ring. Cut to 4 months later, for Christmas, Mandy presented me a beautiful ring she had made for me with my initials, in rose gold. She ran a 4-month con just to be that thoughtful. Mandy Moore! I yelled. I can't take it. I would say 98% of the time I'm confident and secure. Oh, but that 2%. The This Is Us cast is so smart and well-spoken that when we do group interviews, I worry that my spontaneity is actually me putting my foot in my mouth. I don't think anyone will mind if I tell you that we all have a secret text chain that we share jokes and gifts on. The chain includes Mandy, Milo, Sterling, Justin, Chris, Susan, Ron, Dan, and Glenn. Everybody is so clever, and at times I get those nerves again, that feeling of, I'm not smart enough to respond. But I can't not respond because then I'll look like a jerk or like I'm too busy to respond and I'm not prioritizing these relationships. So I say to myself, Chrissy, stop. You're perfectly made. Sterling is also perfectly made. And Mandy and Milo and everyone else. I am the way I am. When that 2% of me takes over for a second, I wonder if everyone else feels the way I get sometimes. The answer, I've learned from talking to so many people about what the show does for them, is yes. We beat ourselves up. And sometimes we all just have to fake it until we make it. When have I faked it to make it? Oh, last week on set. John and Glenn, the duo who directed the pilot, were back to direct an episode. They are awesome. But I went to set saying, I so don't know if I can do this. We were filming a scene where I was on the phone. I was not in the scene with anybody, and those are really challenging for me because I have to rely solely on myself, my ability, and being present. And that's hard because I haven't always shown up for myself. During the filming, I got hot and I started sweating, which is what I do when I'm nervous. And I, of course, thought I was profusely sweating, which only made me more anxious. Also, I had to be doing business, which is what actors call doing things in a scene while acting. In this case, cooking. Doing business makes me uncomfortable because I never want to look unrealistic or inauthentic. I had to cut up food in the kitchen, answer a cell phone, and hit a mark. And the whole time I was preparing, I was thinking, do I really deserve to be here? Maybe there's someone better for this job. I was trying to talk myself out of what I was supposed to do that day, and I caught myself. Chrissy, I said out loud, just do the damn scene. And that scene, and in life, sometimes you have to do what you have to do and not worry about being perfect. The real secret is to focus on the bigger picture, not just yourself. Think about it. My ego was telling me that everything rode on me hitting my mark and nailing my line. But what about the directors? What about the crew? There were 30 people making sure the lighting was right. And there were thousands of dollars on the line for that scene alone. Wait, it's not about me at all. We're a team. When we, again, Lego our ego, we can come back to that place of humility and say, do the work, be prepared, show up for yourself, and show up for everyone else. I got through the scene, and guess what? I didn't die. But there will always be those moments when I become frightened that something is too hard. When I want to stall and say, oh, I have to go to the bathroom, I have to change my shoes, or whatever. When that happens to you, let it go. Do your best and keep it moving. Every day. When I saw the script for the third episode of This Is Us, I quickly scanned it and saw that there was a scene with Kate where her lines were in italics. Lying in my bed, I hear the clock tick and think of you. That meant she was singing. Wait, Kate's singing? Kate's singing time after time? I ran to Dan and attempted to be very subtle about my excitement. Dan! I screamed. He knew exactly what was up. Don't worry if you can't sing, he said. We'll just get someone to dub it. No, Dan, I want to try. Really? I never sang in my auditions, and Dan had no idea how important music is to me. He couldn't have known how much I wanted to sing doll parts on American Horror Story. Now I was going to sing as Kate. We shot the scene at an old folks' home, which was so crazy, because when I studied with my vocal coach, Dot, she used to have us sing at retirement facilities over the holidays. This time, there were 30 background artists who were either half asleep in real life or making an acting choice to be asleep. I looked around and thought, oh, they are not interested in what I have to sing. But I had to give a performance, and I didn't have a choir to hide in or a band to blend in with. They mic'd me, and Glenn and John recorded me for the show. What you heard on the show was me recording it live, so they could capture the most authentic sound. Wait a minute, I said when they started rolling. Y'all didn't tell me that was the plan. It meant a lot to me because singing was my first love and what I've always wanted to do. But, like Kate, I was really afraid and never supported or encouraged in that. Luckily, they made it more of a storyline, incorporating into Kate's always wanting to be like her mom. The first scene where I sang worked because I used my nerves. I started off tiny and a bit shaky and eventually got comfortable, just as Kate would. Here's an actor secret. We just use what's happening. That's the only thing you can do, because the more you resist, the more the fear persists. Whatever you're feeling, lean in and use it. I like to say lean into love, but I know sometimes fear and vulnerability are the most pressing emotions we have. I spent so many years resisting a feeling of vulnerability, and now it is exactly what allows me to do what I love most, which is to connect with people. Be mindful. The power of an apology. At the end of my first day of being on the This Is Us set, I drove myself out of the Fox lot. I was exhausted from spending the day shooting a treadmill scene. When you first get on the lot, they give you a little scan ticket. And when you leave, you have to give it back for security purposes. I was in another world, so I missed the bucket you're supposed to drop it in from your car and tried to just drive through. And the security guard wouldn't lift the gate. "Do you have your scan ticket?" he asked me in an annoyed tone. "Yeah," I answered, bringing him all the exhaustion I was carrying and laying it at his feet. "Well, why didn't you put it in the bucket?" "Well, I didn't see the bucket." "There's clearly a sign," he said. "Well, I didn't see it," I said. We were just trying to battle each other. "Are you not going to let me out now? I've already passed it. Do you want the ticket?" "Just here," he said, lifting the gate for me. The second I was driving on the road, I thought, I want to eat something. I wanted a cheeseburger, a cookie. Clearly in my life, I have often chosen not to share my emotions and instead eat about them. This works for a second to numb those feelings. It fills the void and helps you not deal with what's really going on. But this time, I stopped myself. "Hold on, hold on, Chrissy," I said out loud. "Why did you treat that man this way? Why didn't you just say, would you mind throwing it in the bucket for me? Or what about asking for advice, like, what should I do?" What a concept. That's what it was about. I was embarrassed about not knowing what to do. I decided I wasn't going to go home without making things right. So I turned the car right around and drove back onto the lot. I can't imagine what the guard thought when Miss Ticketude rolled back into his gate. "Hi, I'm the brat," I said, also known as Chrissy. "You challenged me and I reacted. I was wrong. I didn't see the sign and I should have just said that." "What?" he said. There was another guard in the booth with him who started laughing. "Are you coming here to apologize?" the other guard said. And then he paused. "Wow." My guy nodded. "So I'm really sorry for being a bitch," I said. "It was my fault." "I can't believe you came back here to say you're sorry," said my guy, who was now firmly my guy. "Me either," I said. "So, anyway, I hope to see you again. Have a great night." "Goodbye," my new friends said together. We often snap back or lash out because our egos are hurt. We often won't do things like apologize because our egos won't let us. If I hadn't gone back, I would still be reeling about it all night. And more likely, I would have eaten about it. Which wouldn't have worked because I would have continued to be upset and pissed off. For what? Because I didn't see a sign and I couldn't admit to it? That's crazy making! And every single time I left that lot, I would have remembered that mistake. I would stew and I would imagine the guard hated me. Then I would resent him for hating me for a simple mistake. Instead, I freed myself. And I hope I freed him too. 16. A reason, a season, or a lifetime. Forgiveness.
Lord.
A lot of people love the father-daughter relationship I have with Milo Ventimiglia on the show. As you know, I didn't have that in my own life. When I got to Los Angeles, I didn't even want to use Metz as my last name. I didn't want my biological father, Mark, to get any credit whatsoever for my success when and if it did come. He didn't want any part of us when he divorced my mom and abandoned us in poverty, so why should I carry his name? Then I got famous. And he wanted back in. It started with Facebook posts and shout-outs, and I thought, okay, maybe we can start to be cordial. But as soon as I extended the olive branch, it seemed as if he wanted the tree. "How much money are you making on that show?" Those are the first words Mark said to me after 20 years of nothing. He is 66 now and on his fourth wife. I was in his house because of my older sister, Monica, who lives 20 minutes from him and had been trying to create a relationship with our dad. I was in Florida for Christmas, and I went with Monica to exchange Christmas gifts and have dinner. I didn't give him an answer. The look in his eye was clear. "How much are you worth now?" The answer is that I'm worth just as much now as I was when he decided I was worthless at 8 years old. I brought him a lot of food from a health food store that day. He'd previously had health issues and was attempting to lose weight per doctor's orders, so I was trying to be thoughtful. "Thank you," he said. "You're welcome," I said. "I don't have anything for you." "Oh, that's fine. I didn't know you were coming," he said. "I'm just here to see you." I felt a softening, but only slightly. As a grown-up, I know that I don't understand what happened in his childhood that made him act the way he did as an adult. There's a reason he did what he did, and I don't know what that is. What I can do is look at the lesson about how not to be. Otherwise, I don't get anything good from dwelling on it. If it's not helpful, it's hurtful, right? That day, he acted as if 20 years hadn't passed, and we were the closest friends. It was almost delusional. I had extended the olive branch by coming to visit, but his response was too much. Mark is a stranger to me, and I had absolutely no idea how to magically bridge the gulf between us. And then he asked me again, "How much are you making on that show?" I sort of laughed it off and said, "It's none of your business." I immediately felt foolish, and I felt like I was betraying my mother. When she found out that I was going to see Mark, she said, "Oh, now he wants to show up?" The following February, I was on Entertainment Tonight, and Kevin Frazier asked me about my relationship with my father, and I was honest. "There's still a lot of resentment in the family," I explained, "toward him for leaving us. I guess Mark's friends told him about the interview, because the story he had been telling about his involvement in my life did not match mine." I think he was thoroughly embarrassed. He called Monica, demanding to come to her house. "I can't believe Chrissy threw me under the bus," he yelled. And wonderful Monica, my courageous big sister, had my back. "What makes you think that she wants to have a relationship with you when the first thing you ask her about is money?" she asked. "What about all the trauma you put us through as kids?" "Oh, what are you talking about?" "We know what you put Mom through. The cheating..." "What? What? What?" he yelled. "Who told you that? You're going to sit in my house and lie to me?" said Monica. "If you keep lying to me, then you can take your fat ass right out of my house. You had a relationship with Philip. He was your everything. You had a relationship with me. But you had no relationship with Chrissy." "Well, your mother..." "Don't blame my mother for anything. You know how to pick up a phone. You know how to write a letter. You're not blaming my mother for anything. Because all my mom, all our mother, did was support us and make sure that we had a roof over our heads while you're on your fourth marriage and not giving a shit about anyone else." "I'm not going to take this." "Well, you can just sit here and take the truth. And you need to handle it if you want her to be in your life." Sigh, my sister is my hero. Earlier this month, just after Thanksgiving, my little sister Morgana gave me a call. Someone saying she was a journalist had stopped by her house way out in the country. Morgana's husband offered to take the woman's name and number, saying, "If she wants to get in touch with you, she will." She didn't, and Morgana immediately called Trigger to warn him something was up. "Oh, yeah," he said. "She already came by to talk to me. I let her in the house, and she took pictures." The woman stopped at Monica's house, too, but she didn't answer the door. We learned what was up when the Daily Mail posted a long interview with Trigger and my stepsister, Rebecca, alongside photos of them posed at my childhood home. In it, Trigger talks at length about my weight and then says, "We never put any pressure on her to eat differently or work out." What? I just didn't know what to do with that. He thinks that he said I could eat whatever I wanted, and yet he weighed me constantly? Wow. Okay. But I had to believe that he was just taken advantage of. Besides, I know the truth. The very next day, Morgana was at the grocery store when she saw a headline in the National Enquirer. She sent me a screenshot, and I guess it was Mark's turn with the reporter. Above a picture of my biological father, Mark, a headline screamed, "Chrissy abandoned me. Navy man Metz blames ex for shattering family. This is a Stars dad tells all." In the article, which the Enquirer called a blockbuster, he insists I have shut him out and calls my mom a liar. Somehow, his 8-year-old daughter abandoned him. Or maybe as an adult, as a father, he couldn't take responsibility for his actions.